Hey there, next on the Teen Nation, thanks for coming back and tuning in to part two of this week's show featuring my conversations with top 50 U.S. kids instructor and top 50 LPGA instructor, Megan Yonkman, plus comedic legend, Tom Dreesen. Megan Yonkman is one of the great people you get to meet in this life. She is a wonderful individual, and on top of that, a fantastic teacher. She's doing great things with her junior golfers, 17 and under, 13 and under All-Stars, tremendous year. You'll hear those stories. Plus, we'll get into the Solheim Cup, and she teaches out of Bethpage State Park up in New York, so they're getting prepared for next year's Ryder Cup, so you'll hear those stories as well. Following her, I'll catch up with Tom Dreesen. Tom has been on the show a couple of times in the past. Really looking forward to catching up with him. He is one of the legendary comedians in show business. He spent many years as the opening act and traveling the world with Frank Sinatra. You'll hear those stories. Plus, he has a rich history in our game. He had his own pro-am for many years. He participated in the Bob Hope Desert Classic for many years. Got to play alongside so many great entertainers like Sammy Davis Jr. So a lot to get into with Tom. Excited to have him back as part of the show. So as always, sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. Before we get started, I want to remind you about our friends over at 2Under. 2Under Men's Performance Briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2, UNDR.com. 2Under, performance in your pants.
Every January, PGA Tour Superstore pros meet every manufacturer, learn about the latest equipment, log thousands of hours of training, and together hit over 100,000 balls, all so they can get you the perfect fit.
Now back with me is one of the most wonderful people and best instructors in our game, and that is Megan Yonkman. Megan is an LPGA Class A teaching professional. When you look back on Megan's playing and coaching career, what you're going to see is she captained her high school team to back-to-back state championships. She played her college golf at Ohio State and the University of Toledo, where she lettered in 1996. She earned Class A teaching professional status in 2001. In September of 2011, Megan was appointed the head coach of the state of Florida in the PGA Junior League's Golf World Series held outside of Atlanta here at TPC Sugarloaf. She is a U.S. Kids Golf Top 50 teacher. She's an LPGA Top 50 teacher. She spent 9 years at River Hills Country Club just outside of Tampa, Florida, as the director of instruction there. She moved over to Temple Terrace Golf and Country Club as their director of instruction for 8+ years. She is now the director of instruction at the Golf Channel Academy, led by Kelly Brook at Bethpage State Park in New York. Last year, she was named Junior Golf Leader of the Year, and I'm so honored I get to have her back with me this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey there, Megan. How are you, my friend?
Hey there, Chris. Great to be back. We've had quite a big year.
No doubt. So tell us, you know, it's been a minute since I got to have you on the show. Update us. What's been going on with you?
Well, let me tell you, we've really expanded the academy. You know, we've been here at Bethpage now since 2018, the Golf Channel Academy with Kelly Brook. And, you know, I came in with her to help develop. And, you know, that's what I do is develop programs and get them to be as successful as possible. And then just last year, we were able to, the contracts came up for Montauk Downs, which is at the end of Long Island. That's a state property as well to operate over there in the golf department and the range in the academy. So we actually won that bid. And then we went into two more courses here that are pretty close, actually. They're within a half an hour, each one of them, to Bethpage. So now we've won those contracts and we're operating at Lido Beach Golf Course and also Merrick Golf Club. So when it comes to me, those teachers, I inherit those teachers and we get them on board to our programming and we inevitably bring our own director into each one of those properties so that they work directly with me and my staff here. And then we just go from there and we start to build those programs out. So we're really happy that all this has taken place in such a short time, though.
And Megan, you mentioned Montauk. I've heard wonderful things about that park and the golf courses out there. Touch on that because it looks outstanding from what I've seen online.
Oh, well, even the pictures, I mean, it doesn't even give it justice, but it's a beautiful course. It is a top five muni. So we were lucky in that aspect. There is only one course on that property and there's driving range. But, you know, it's kind of like, you know, how they call Bethpage the People's Country Club. You know, for out there, it's also the People's Country Club, but it's a state facility, state park facility. So you're not paying those rates. You know, so typically our clientele out there are, it's very much touristy spot. There are some locals, but the people in the city often come out to Montauk to relax. So you've got a lot of city people that come out. You know, they go through the Hamptons just to get out to Montauk, which is way at the end of the island. And then once they get out there, they're relaxing. It's a big surf community. So they've got the golf course right there that they can play. And, you know, a lot of people that don't want to join these country clubs and, you know, just for the sake of the fact that they can't play them and get their money's worth that are on Long Island, they come out to Montauk Downs and get their play and practice. And the facility's great. The golf course is just in pristine condition. The views, oh my gosh. And especially at night, you know, I was fortunate last year, especially before I hired a director in there. I was out there a lot, you know, trying to take up some of the teaching time, you know, introducing our staff and so forth. And really, we were getting the business ready last year. And at nighttime, the deer on the fairways, I mean, it just blows your mind at all the wildlife. And it's just it's a gorgeous setting, especially at sunset.
And from what I've noticed by doing the research on Montauk, the person you brought in there as a director of instruction is a wonderful friend of this show, Keith Jarvis.
Yes, he's a wonderful golf professional. We've established a great relationship this year. We'll see if he wants to come back. It's been great to have him out there. I'm sure he's loved because, you know, even if you're working all the time, you still feel like you're on a little bit of a vacation. And I'm sure that that's different from his every day when he's in Florida during the off season, we'll call it the Florida in season. But it's been a great pleasure to have him aboard.
Megan, you've done so many great things with the junior golf program, you know, not just right there where you're at, but across the country. You've been a teacher in a lot of different places, and you've helped a lot of junior players achieve their goals. I got to ask you, looking back over the course of your career and the things that you've done, tell me about some of the great stories from the kids that you've coached over the years that have gone on to do some wonderful things with their own golf careers.
You know, the most rewarding thing, I always say this, and I always feel it, is when they come back to say hi. During the process, you know, we get them to a certain point, and then, you know, they're on their way, and they're in college, and then they're playing, you know, in their tournaments. Sometimes it's semi-professional, and sometimes it's the tour, and they're lending their hand into that playing realm, and we're super supportive, and it really is nice for them to come back. You know, the best, I guess, success stories with, you know, for me that just come up, especially because recently we're going back. We're going, our PGA Junior League team, our U17, we just qualified for Nationals last weekend.
So I
got
to
tell you, yeah, I got to brag a little bit about these kids. There's six of them and they're, you know, out of our region, which is about five states, they are the top six kids out of over 8,600 kids that were in these programs. So we hosted at Bethpage, which was nice on our home turf, but it really didn't matter when it came down to the final matches to get to Nationals. They had to grind as hard as every other team. And we were really, really successful and very proud of them. So we get to go to Nationals coming up in November. This is the second year in a row. You know, in 2011, before PGA had any hand in junior league, it was just called junior league golf, and it's developed, you know, over the, obviously that's been a long time ago, but it has developed over the years tremendously. And I was happy to be one of the pioneer coaches back in 2010 and 2011 when junior league was was starting and playing. And thankfully, I became, they called me to be the state of Florida's head coach at the time when one of their first nationals that they held. And so I got a little chance to do that. And I really shook my head and thought, oh, this is a time. This is something, you know, when you do something and you think, you know, I'm so darn lucky. This is something that'll never happen to you again. Well, who would have thought that 8 years later, I was taking the New York team of U13 to nationals and now U17, the last, now it'll be the last 2 years, last year and this year. So that, I got to say that seeing these kids here, especially at Bethpage, because we start from ground up and a lot of these kids, these champions, and I'm going to call them absolute champions. They're absolute champions in life. They're absolute champions on the golf course within their sportsmanship and their winning, and not just as a team, but individually. And seeing that is the most rewarding because that means somehow we did a really, really good job because we picked the human aspect over the player. And a lot of programs don't do that. I would never be a part of a program that doesn't do that, but we especially put the child in front of our life, you know, in front of playing. And that has superseded and had them enjoying the game, wanting to practice, always feeling like they have a home here. And I can tell you, it's just fantastic to be a part of all of that.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the 17 and under team, but your 13 and under all-star team did pretty well too.
They did. We were so proud of them. They made it to the finals, but unfortunately they didn't quite cut it this year, but that's all right. They were a little devastated to say the least, but they're also a very young team because think about 13U, it's any age under 13, you know, pretty much starting at 8. So they were a little devastated. So we had to have some life lesson talks, you know, and you know, how to dust yourself off and get back up and, you know, come to practice tomorrow because we've got a lot of work to do.
I want to give a shout out to you, A, just because you're great, and B, because one of your students said of you, Megan is kind, patient, and won't give up. Her tips are always in my mind when I golf, and she has helped me beyond anything I thought I was capable of doing. Just the best. So yeah. Kudos to you for that, but that's got to make you feel good.
It does. It really does. They, you know, just having, being able to be that role model, and it makes me be a better person, to be honest with you. When you're surrounded with great people, and I'm going to say this about our adult program as well. When you're surrounded by people that you have to show up for, I think it really continues to make you strive to be that better person and that better leader. And find ways to do that every single day. So it gives you a lot of purpose and I'm really thankful. Because I have a career that, well, you know, I know that I've stuck with it, but I have a career that I can be proud of, you know, and kind of try to make myself proud, you know, every day.
I love the part where she says that you helped her, the student, beyond anything that she thought she was capable of doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Talk about there's how no you're ceiling. Able to help the kids to see more in themselves than they see, you know, for themselves.
Well, there's no ceiling. And we wait for the good. You know, we don't expect the good. We wait for the good. We practice, you know, we practice and, you know, in golf and in every other sport, practice somehow gives you some entitlement to think that its return is going to be grander than it is, right? So we have to know how to lose in golf more, probably more than any other sport. You lose all the time, but you also can win all the time. And I think that the more activity and, you know, in golf, especially when it becomes year round and that's your major sport, you're putting yourself in positions constantly to win or lose. And when we cheer and we become emotionally attached to the win, we have to be more mechanically attached to the loss, right? We've got to think, okay, what can I do to make this better? We can't just coddle, you know, coddle. We want to, when they're younger, yes, we're talking about those emotions and we're letting them have them. But we're also allowing them the space to get back up. And we're telling them, you know, no, this is what we do. We don't have really another option of being, you know, staying down, right? We give it more purpose than that.
Megan, I imagine you as a young player being focused on playing the game at a high level. You played as a professional. Talk about the first time, though, that you helped out at a clinic and what it was like for you when you helped that first person hit a ball off the ground for the first time, got one up in the air.
Ah, you remember that story? It's such a good story because that was my moment. I think that every, you know, when you're a player of the game, well, my gosh, when I was younger and I was, all my head was around playing, you know, I was going to play college, you know, at first I was going to succeed in my high school team. I got to do it, got to do it. Then I was going to go to college and play, and then I'm going to play professional, and all, everything was playing. Now, don't get me wrong. That was exciting. It was fun. It was hard work, and I loved hard work. Still like that, but I didn't know that there was another part of golf that besides I knew that people worked in pro shops and I knew that people became professionals, but I really just had it in my head about playing anyway. So unfortunately money wasn't like it is now with golf and frankly, women's golf, especially. So I had to have a job. And when I went home, I got a job and I was working at a driving range and it had 2 18-hole golf courses there, or no, 1 18-hole, 1 9-hole. And I knew I could play there and practice for free and, you know, all of the steps we all take when we're that age. So the head pro at the time, somebody didn't show up to teach this clinic in this class. It was going to be a group class, men and women. I don't know, probably 12 to 15 people there. Well, the second pro couldn't make it for some reason. And the pro that was there said, I need you to come outside and help me with the clinic. And I said, okay. And it was a female. And she said, okay, but I'm going to tell you right now, here's your job. When I'm down there, you're down here. When I'm down here, you're down there. And I don't want you to talk or say anything but hello to these people. Just stand there. You're just, and I said, well, what am I here for? She said, safety. Cause they're not, you know, they're a little bit newer players. I said, oh, okay. Well, I don't know anything on how to help anybody anyway, right? I'd only know how to play. People tell me what to do. I don't know how to teach at this point. So basically, long story short, the guy in front of me turned around to me, of course, when I was right behind him and said, what am I doing wrong? And I looked at him with like a deer in the headlights and I just nodded my head no, because I wasn't supposed to talk. So anyway, he says, he looks back at me again. And I felt like, I really felt mean not helping him because I kind of knew what he was doing. So I looked down there and that golf professional down there, she was not paying attention to anything I was doing. So I ran in the lesson tee and I moved his hands on the club and then I ran back to my post. And I just stood there and he looked back. He said, now what? And I said, hit the ball. And he hit the ball and it went up in the air. Now I'm making that a very, you know, extraordinary story with a lot of excitement, but that is how I felt. So after he hits it up in the air, I didn't know what to do. He was almost honestly dramatically, he was so excited. He was almost in tears. He was like, I can do this. I can do this, you know, and that changed. All of a sudden, I felt something that I really hadn't felt before. I mean, I felt really close to playing and I was very happy with it. But once I felt that go down all the way through my gut, I knew I'm going to do something else with this sport. And all I wanted to do was learn how to teach.
That's fantastic. I love that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Megan, Women's Golf Day has really taken off over the last several years. And I know that you've taken part in that event, doing clinics and things of that nature and helping organize the ladies to go out there and play at Bethpage on that day. Are you seeing more and more people taking advantage of that event? Are you seeing it grow each and every year?
You know, the MGA runs that with us. That is a Lexus-sponsored event through the MGA. And he came to me a few years ago, and Kelly and I put this event together. This is what we do. You know, we put these group clinics on. Well, there's 30 ladies that sign up and show up and we've got Lexus out here, you know, with all the big signs. It really looks really professional. You've got a top professional staff and both Kelly, Brooke and I, and then our assistants. And then you've got the facility, you know, and then they're going to have, Lexus really does a great job with this Women's Golf Day event. They give them all kinds of free swag. They've got, you know, us instructing. And then afterwards, the ladies get to drink and eat for free. It's amazing. They have a great time. And they have a couple presentations up, you know, a little entertainment in there, too. So we had 30 ladies sign up that first year. We're up to 90 and we have a waiting list. In fact, this year, Lexus had not one, but three different days of three different events because these women are knocking on the door. It is spectacular. Now, of course, all the peripherals help sell this, you know, help sell this, this notion, but really we get in there, you know, we wow them with, you know, and let them, once they start doing well, you kind of get addicted, right? I mean, you hit it up in the air a few times and you're like, I can do this. And then, you know, and then you get with your golfing friends. But when I'm in there, I typically, you know, Kelly does it or I do it their speech, you know, afterward. And when I'm in there, I tell them, this is what this is for. And next year, you're going to invite a friend because that's what this is for. Women's Golf Day, we want to invite a friend that's never golfed, but a friend that likes you. So you bring them and let us show them golf. So then they do that. And then the next year they do that. And look at where we are now.
That's awesome. 90.
Oh, every single week we had not over 90. I had to get extra staff in. That's like my best problem to have.
No doubt. That's awesome. Megan, I want to switch gears a little bit. And you mentioned the facility. The Ryder Cup is set to come there to Bethpage Black next year in 2025. How often have you seen Keegan Bradley there since he's been named captain? And what are all the exciting events? You got a year, but I imagine it's going to go by fast.
It's already starting. This is it. You know, it was a little dull before because it was just boots on the ground. You'd see the backpacks walking around, taking golf carts out, you know, going upstairs for meetings. And then they'd leave and then they come back. So it was kind of like that for a little while. And now, I mean, okay, so Keegan was here within a month ago. I forget what the date was, but it was all over social media. So you can take a look. But he was here and, you know, he's got a long history here. He went to St. John's and he played his college golf here. But his coach was my friend, Frank Darby. You know, Frank?
Yep.
Yeah. So Frank was the coach then. And the superintendent before Andy, who's here now, was Craig Currier. And that was Frank's friend. So Frank arranged with the superintendent on Mondays to have the team dropped off at the maintenance building. And his kids would play holes 3 through 14 every Monday. So Keegan was on that team. So that's a pretty cool story. Yeah. So he's got a lot of like emotional attachment here and he's got a lot of pull, you know, he's just such a nice guy anyway. I mean, he's so soft spoken and he's just a really great guy. So he was here and, you know, honestly, with it coming up, registration just went up yesterday, but it's not registration to buy a ticket. You're registering to purchase tickets through a random drawing. So
is that right? Is that demand is so high?
Oh, yeah. This whole event is about the people. You know, there's going to be hardly any players here. This isn't like the PGA. This is all about the spectators. So, in fact, they're launching it. It's called the Year to Go. Get it? We've got a year to go. So they're the year to go events, and they launch October 7th in the city. So, for instance, the players or the captains are going to be there, and they're going to be hitting balls near the Statue of Liberty into the water or something like that. I don't know. There's going to be a ton of events. All the press conferences with both captains, a lot of media events. So those will definitely, that's is that 2 weeks from now? I don't know. It's October 7th. So that's coming up real quick. So things are starting to get, we want to get the, you know, I'm sure they want to get the fever happening around here more than it is.
No doubt. One more before I let you go. And I'll, along these same lines. We just had a wonderful Solheim Cup. The U.S. finally wins the cup back for the first time in 7 years. What'd you think about what you saw there?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. The spirit, everything. I mean, and, you know, sometimes in those singles matches, that's when that team, you know, that's trailing behind comes up. So I, you know, you're always a little bit nervous because you're talking about the best players in the world. You can't single them out and just predict that somebody's going to win. Especially a Solheim Cup. Fortunately, I was there in Ohio when they had the Solheim Cup. I think that was 2021. This was only in Virginia. Literally, I put it in my phone. It was 4 hours and 45 minutes from where I live, door to door, but I could not get away this year because so much going on. But watching it was just phenomenal with the almost goodbye to Lexi. They really knocked it out of the park. It's sad that she's leaving the tour for, well, so we know for now. But that send off was great. And I think it was in such a wonderful environment for her, emotionally, mentally. And all those girls just took it. They won that outright.
Yeah, I was so hoping that Lexi was going to win her singles match. I know it didn't matter in the outcome, but boy, I just wanted her to win that thing. Just kind of as a swan song goodbye for this thing. And I really hope at the end of the day that maybe she takes a couple of years off and then decides to come back. I think losing her off the tour is a huge loss, and she's such a fan favorite. I hope she gets away from it for a little while and then rediscovers her love for it, because what I really think is driving her out of the game is us. It's all the people out there on social media and Twitter and the mean-spirited things that they say to her and the expectations that we've all placed on her over the years. Mm-hmm. I hope she can settle that and come back and be happy.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'm sure, you know, we have no idea what kind of shoes she sits in every day.
Right.
And it's really important for her to take some time and really rebuild what she needs to, kind of like Simone Biles. And it, you know, when you are the athlete, I mean, I know it because I'm kind of the athlete on the other side now. You know, in this big culture here with Bethpage and everything like that. And I can tell you that, you know, you have to really treat your brain like you do your body. And it's a little bit harder work because it's not just black and white, like, you know, like your physical fitness. Right. So it's, you gotta, you know, when you're in that light and you're focused on all the time, you know, people with social media now, we didn't have to deal with that when I was playing. I didn't have to deal with any of that. So whatever people thought of you and said about you, you didn't hear about it unless they said it to you or someone you know.
Right.
So this is a whole different world. I can't imagine.
Yeah, indeed.
Yep. Wish her the best.
Same. Before I let you go, remind our listeners again how they can stay up to date with all the great things you're out there doing, whether they're following you online or it's on social media.
For sure. I have meganyunkman.com. I keep that up a little bit, but most of the time you can go to our golf course websites by name, like bethpagegolfcourse.com. You can also go to our Academy page, which is Golf Channel Academy, kellybrook.com. That has all of the updates. Social media, I've got social media. Our Golf Channel Academy has social media. Megan Yunkman, LPGA. Follow along. I've got an athlete page on Facebook. I also have an Instagram page, Megan_Yunkman_LPGA on Instagram. Our marketing and media department, we're sending out things all the time through the channels, and I also post on it. So yeah, join me there. I would love to connect.
Megan, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come back and be a part of the show again this week. As I said in your intro, you're just one of the most wonderful people that we have in our game and on the planet for that matter. So I can't thank you enough for being here and everything that you do for the game of golf. I hope we get the privilege of catching up with you again, maybe a little bit later on in the year.
That sounds great, Chris. Always, always, always my pleasure.
Take care, Megan. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks, Chris.
See you, Megan. That is the great Megan Yunkman, folks. Yunkman is the spelling of her last name. MeganYunkman.com is where you can find her online. At Megan_Yunkman_LPGA is where you can find her on Instagram. She is just one of the most wonderful people you're going to find on this planet. And if you've got a young up-and-coming golfer that you want to find a fantastic teacher for, Megan Yunkman is who you need to be looking up and following and reaching out to. She's fantastic. She does great things with the junior players. She does great things for women's golf. She does great things for our game in general. I can't thank her enough for coming back and being a part of this week's show. We'll catch up with her hopefully a little bit later on in the year. Coming up next is going to be comedic legend Tom Dreesen. Tom is one of the all-time greats. He opened up for Sinatra for many years. He was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson 61 times. You're going to hear some really great stories. Before I bring Tom into the program, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's squairz.com.
Frustrated with your golf game? Imagine playing with total confidence. Join me, LPGA Pro and golf mindset expert Debbie O'Connell, for my Conquer Your Golf Mind Challenge. Bill cuts 6 strokes and Lori is club champion. What's your goal? Click the link or text NEXT to 727-339-0106. Use code NEXT for $20 off. Your tee time for transformation is now. Will you take the shot?
All right, now back and making a very long overdue return visit here on Next on the Tee is a comedian who is a legend in the business and a wonderful actor as well, and that is Tom Dreesen. Let me give you some background on Tom. He's from Harvey, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, where they have a street named in his honor, oh, by the way. He's made over 500 appearances on television as a stand-up comedian, including becoming a regular on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, as well as Letterman. He toured as the opening act for Frank Sinatra for many years. You've probably seen him in TV shows like Columbo, WKRP in Cincinnati, Murder, She Wrote, or in movies like Spaceballs, The Rat Pack, and Trouble with the Curve. He's also an avid golfer, host of Tom Dreesen Classic. He was a big part of the Bob Hope Desert Classic for many years. He was inducted into the Caddy Hall of Fame back in 2009, and he was the recipient of the Gene Sarazen and Spirit Award. He's a Navy veteran who has performed for our troops around the world for many, many years as well. And in 2005, he received the Ellis Island Medal of Honor, which is given to American immigrants or their children for their significant contributions to our country here in the U.S. And I am honored that I get to have Tom back here with me this week on Next on the Tee. Hey, Tom, thanks for coming back on the show.
Thank you, Chris. That introduction was longer than my career, but I really appreciate it. Whenever I'm at that age now where if I go to a local comedy club and try out some new material like the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory or the Comedy Chateau or Flappers, all these comedy clubs out here in LA, the young comedians will introduce me as a legend. And I say, you know how I became a legend? All my critics are dead. I outlived them all.
Good for you. Tom, I got to get a sports question because I was a long-suffering Boston Red Sox fan, and October of 2004 is one of the most heart-stopping happy times of my life. I have to imagine the same holds true for you back in 2016 when your Cubs finally got their World Series championship. What was it like for you during that postseason?
You know, I went to 3 of the games, and I was so excited. My history, I go way back. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, as you pointed out. I was in White Sox territory. I didn't know that when I was 5 and 6 years old. My dad used to listen to Cub games on the radio. So I became a Cub fan as a little boy at 5, 6 years old. By the time I was 8 years old, I didn't realize I was in enemy territory. By the time I was 8 years old, I could take a punch. You know, the White Sox thing hated the Cubs. You know, but I just was an avid Cub fan. And through the years in show business, so many wonderful things happened to me. In the 80s, Jim Fry let me be bat boy for the Cubs for 4 games every year. I would go into Chicago and appear at a local comedy club because they only played day games at that time. And the Cubs would, I would be bat boy during the day. And then the Cubs would all come to my shows. All the players and their wives would come to my shows at nighttime, you know. So that year, the first year I did it, a rookie pitcher named Greg Maddox, you know, Jamie Moyer, you know, those kind of guys. Ryan Sandberg was on the team and a big fan. And Rick Sutcliffe is a good buddy of mine. I had this wonderful time for 4 years being bat boy. And then they let me hit batting practice and they let me run around the outfield before the game and catch fly balls and stuff. I was like a pig in slop. So when they finally got to the World Series, I mean, I tell you the truth, on the final game, I was down in Palm Springs, Palm Desert, doing a corporate date. And I finished my show and rushed up to my suite to watch this game. And when they won, I couldn't talk. And I make my living talking. My daughter called me and she said, Dad, Are you excited? And I was so choked up, Chris, I couldn't talk. All those years of the raggedy, ragging you because you're a Cub fan, all those abuses we took and good taste, we laughed at it and everything. But all of a sudden, all I could think about was all the people I knew that are gone now and didn't get a chance to witness this, the Cubs winning the World Series. I was choked up for like 20 minutes. I could hardly talk. I just walked around the room and saying, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. But they did it. They finally won a World Series.
As a long-suffering Red Sox fan, I know after the 2004 World Series, when the Red Sox finally did it, there were a lot of people that went back to the local cemeteries and brought memorabilia, banners, things of that nature, signifying that they finally won the World Series and to celebrate with their families that never got to see it, in respect to a father, a grandfather, an uncle, a brother, someone who had passed and never got to see the Red Sox win a World Series. People were going back and celebrating and sharing that with the folks that had passed on. I have to imagine something similar happened with all the folks there in Chicago as well.
Oh, absolutely. It was, the city was just an ecstasy, it's just hard to describe. You know, when you grew up in Chicago, I had eight brothers and sisters. I mean, there were eight of us kids. We lived in a shack. We had no bathtub and no shower, no hot water, a rat-infested, roach-infested shack. We had no television. And even though everybody else had television, we were raggedy poor. And you get up and you're going to school, we were walking to school 2.5 miles in the snow and cold. And then you got older and you got jobs, you know. You're working in the cold and the bitter cold and all the hardships you go through as a Chicagoan. But every summer you had that hope, maybe this could be the year. So you vicariously live through those Cubs because they would do the best they could, but they came up short. And we were doing the best we could, but sometimes we came up short. And finally, the Cubs almost like did it for us. You know, it's just it's something that any fan, you know, the word fan is derived from the word fanatic. So any fan whose team has won the World Series like that after a long time knows that feeling, that great relief that I'm glad I was alive and it happened in my lifetime.
Yeah. Tom, switching gears a little bit, I sent you a text message about a year ago because I was watching reruns of The Tonight Show back when Johnny Carson was still hosting. I turned it on and he was in the middle of talking to Tony Randall. And when they took a break, Johnny said, we'll be back with comedian Tom Dreesen. And you came out and you were brilliant as you always were. And you replied back to the text saying that you always cringe when you see reruns when you were on. Why?
I did 61 appearances on The Tonight Show. And as you pointed out, over 500 on national television. I always look and say, I could have done this better. I could have done that better. You know, there were nights that it went real well. But you know, as you grow older, you grow as a comedian, and my timing is different today. Even though I always felt like I had pretty good timing, but all of that, as you get older, you look back and say, "I could have done better." So that's how I am, and I just cringe when I say, "Look at that tie I was wearing. Look at all my hair." So I try not to watch. You know, it's just something that I think most artists would say, even in acting, you know, you'd see a role you did and you'd say, gosh, I should have done this. I should have done that. You know, you always think you could have done a little bit better.
I have to imagine the pressure is immense when you're stepping out on that stage as a young comedian to try to get Johnny to laugh. Do you remember your first appearance on The Tonight Show?
You know, everywhere in 1975, I was with a comedy team for 6 years. Tim Reed and I were America's first black and white comedy team. History shows we were the last, you know. Tim later became Venus Flytrap on WKRP. He was on another show called Sister, Sister. He played the father. He's done many sitcoms. But we were a comedy team for 6 years. When the team split up and I went alone, everywhere you went in America in 1975, people say, what do you do for a living? You say, I'm a stand-up comedian. The next question out of their mouth was, oh, yeah? Have you ever been on Johnny Carson? And if you hadn't been on Johnny Carson in the eyes of America, you just weren't a comedian. You might want to be one, you might going to be one, but you weren't one now. So we all geared to get to that show. All across America, comedians came out of everywhere, all across the land to get to Hollywood, to get to Los Angeles, to the Comedy Store, because that's where the Tonight Show coordinators looked at new comedians. Freddie Prinze did one appearance on the Tonight Show and got a sitcom the next day. I mean, we all knew that show could launch you. And 28 million people watch a show every night. So when I went out there, I ended up sleeping in a car. My wife and kids were back in Chicago. I was broke. I was hitchhiking up and down Sunset Boulevard. And I struggled. And I finally got on at the Comedy Store and began to work on material. And I finally got the Tonight Show to come and see me. They looked at three acts that night, a comedy team called Baum and Esten, a new kid named Billy Crystal, and Tom Dreesen. I don't know whatever happened to Billy, but I'm with Chris Mascaro right now. So coming to be. Anyhow, my point was, when you finally got to that Tonight Show and I got on, I mean, the coordinator, Craig Tennis, came and auditioned me, looked at me and said, okay, you're on next week. I went there on a Tuesday night. They put you in makeup. I went up to my dressing room. They bring you down to the green room and they came in and said, we ran out of time. You got bumped. Come back next week. I came back next week into makeup, up to the dressing room, down to the green room. They ran out of time. They did that 3 weeks in a row. The fourth week I went there, I'm in makeup, and the producer, Fred DeCordova, came in and said, I got bad news for you. I said, what? He said, you're going on tonight. Now you get a lump in your throat the size of a grapefruit. And when it's time to go on, they bring you a long walk from the green room all the way to the back behind the curtain. Doc Severinsen's playing the orchestra because they're in commercial break. And now you're behind that curtain and the coordinator leaves you alone. And you're about to go out in front of 28 million people. All the buyers from Las Vegas watch that show. All the people from sitcoms watch that show. Nightclubs all across America watch that show. And my mom had everybody in Harvey, Illinois watching. So if I bombed, I couldn't even go back home, you know. So, now, they come out of commercial and Johnny Carson says, we're back now. And I'm glad you're in such a good mood tonight. Sorry, I'm glad you're in such a good mood tonight because my next guest is making his first appearance on the Tonight Show. Welcome, Tom Dreesen. And you walk out in front of, and bright lights hit you. You know, you can't see the audience. So you hit your spot. And I did my first joke. It got laughed. And I did my second joke. I laughed. My third joke, I hear Johnny Carson and Ed McMahon laughing. Now, I got 8 applause, you know, on my first Tonight Show. And now I was closing. I said, you've been a wonderful audience. This is my first appearance on the Tonight Show. So show business is a tough life. So if you like me, just if you like me, and you're Protestant, say a prayer. If you're Catholic, light a candle. If you're Jewish, somebody in your family owns a nightclub. Tell them about me. Will you please? I get a big applause. I go back through the curtain and Johnny Carson called me back out for another bow. And I came back out for a second bow. And Johnny gave me the little circle with his fingers and you know that I had arrived. And I never stopped working from that night. This is my 55th year in show business. And I work all the time. And it all happened because of that first Tonight Show.
Tom, switching gears a little bit, I want to talk a little golf since this is a golf show. And your contributions to this game have been significant. You host your own tournament, inducted in the Caddy Hall of Fame. I've had Dennis Cohen on the show many times. Dennis helped get that Caddy Hall of Fame up and running. What was it like for you to be recognized for the great things that you've done in the game?
Well, you know, the thing, I caddied when I was a little boy. How much that meant to me as a kid living in a shack, you know, with 8 brothers and sisters. I had to go caddy to help feed my brothers and sisters. I set pins in bowling alleys. I sold newspapers on the corner, but caddying in the summertime. And I grew up wanting to be, maybe one day thinking I could own a tavern. My father was alcoholic and spent all of his money in a tavern. And so I thought that that was the epitome of success. I couldn't think outside of my environment. And so when I went to caddy at Ravislow Country Club, a little south of Harvey, in Homewood, Illinois, this was Mr. Florsheim, Mr. Mayling, all these, you know, wealthy, affluent people. And they didn't treat me like a servant. They treated me like a son, you know. And now here I was with 150 caddies working on a merit system every year. 12 caddies, 150 caddies went to a banquet. The top 12 got to bring their mother. You know, but I was in this environment. And after about 2 or 3 years, I start thinking maybe I could be more. than just a tavern owner, you know, because I couldn't think outside of my environment. I understand when a young ghetto kid wants to grow up to become a pimp or a drug pusher because he's never seen a more successful man in his environment. You know what I mean? He sees this. So that's, I can, it makes sense to me that some of them want to grow up to be in that kind of endeavor, you know, because they've never lived outside that environment. And that's what caddying did for me. And at age 17, I went in the Navy and spent 4 years in the service, served in a Marine Corps unit for 9 months, came out, and I gave up all thought of golf. I was a pretty good golfer as a kid. I once took third in the caddy championship. I used the members' clubs because I couldn't afford any clubs, you know. But throughout, you know, the struggling and working construction and all these other things, when I finally went into show business, you know, I wanted to start playing golf again, but I didn't because, again, I was struggling. But then after I did my first Tonight Show, I started touring with Sammy Davis Jr. as his opening act. And he had a pro tournament, the Sammy Davis Jr. Pro-Am up in Hartford, Connecticut. And one day I went out on a golf cart with him just riding around and I was swinging one of his clubs. He said, "Hey, you got a nice swing there, babe. You play?" I said, "Well, I haven't played in years." When we went to Phoenix, Arizona to perform there, Ping was there. And that was one of his sponsors. I went in my dressing room. I had a brand new set of Woods and Irons with my name on the bag.
Wow.
2 weeks later, Bob Hope invites me to the Bob Hope Classic, and I hadn't played in years. I got to that first tee. I went and practiced a little bit, but I got to that first tee. There's thousands of people lining the fairway on the left and on the right. And my knees, they're going, "Ladies and gentlemen, on the tee, comedian Tom Dreesen." And now people are applauding. And I'm saying to the people on the fairway and the rough, you know, "Could you move a little bit further to the right?" But anyhow. Then I made up my mind, if I'm going to play this game, I'm going to work on it. So I played in the Bob Hope Classic for over 30 years. And also I played in the AT&T. Clint Eastwood is a buddy of mine. He'd have me up every year to perform. And I played in that for over 20 years. And then I played on a tour, the Celebrity Players Tour. It was basketball, baseball, football, hockey, tennis, and show business people that were 10 handicap or below. So it was Johnny Bench, Mike Schmidt, Mario Lemieux, John Elway, Dan Marino, Michael Jordan. We had 42 Hall of Famers. And in show business, it was me, Matt Lauer, Brian Gumbel, Smokey Robinson, Jack Wagner, you know, real good golfer. Rick Roden won over $2 million on that tour. We played 12 cities a year, and which was a joy for me as well, you know, competing with all these great athletes, you know. So, golf has become a major part of my comedy career. I had my own golf tournament that was part of the Celebrity Players Tour. I had that for years. Every time that I would go to the Bob Hope Classic or I'd go to the AT&T or I'd go to even our own tour, at the end of the tournament, there'd be a dinner, a banquet, and I'd always have to get up and do 5 or 10 minutes of stand-up comedy or MC and do a monologue. Well, in the audience were Fortune 500 companies. I can't tell you how many gigs I got, you know, AT&T, IBM, American Airlines. Corporate people would come up after the show and hand me their card and say, "Please have your agent get a hold of me." And I ended up getting corporate gigs. So it became a lucrative thing for me as well, you know. But golf. And then when Dennis Cohen came to me, what happened? I wrote 2 articles in golf magazines about the caddy program and how important it is. And as I mentioned to you earlier, how the kid from the ghetto who never has been outside of his area, when he would come and become a caddy, it put him in a totally different environment and how important that was, you know, the caddy programs. And because of that, Dennis inducted me into the PGA Tour Caddies Hall of Fame. Now, one more thing I'm going to say about that. What's fun about that, I'm a member at Lakeside Golf Club here in LA, and the caddies all there know that I'm in the PGA Tour Caddies Hall of Fame. Because I made sure they knew. And I will say to a caddy, my caddy Gilberto, I'll say to him sometimes, "What do you see, Gilbert?" And he'll say, "It's a ball out." I'll say, "I think it's at least a cup and a half out." He's, "No, it's a ball out." I say, "You're going to argue with a Hall of Fame caddy?" You know, he's okay. So, you know, golf, in the words of a guy from Saturday Night Live, but a different sport, golf has been very, very good to me.
Tom, when you look back over the time that you were out on the Celebrity Tour, who were some of the athletes that you had an opportunity to play with, and who was your favorite to get paired up with?
Well, there could be so many people. Johnny Bench is a great golfer, but also a great baseball player. And I was a fan of his, even though he used to beat the Cubs to death all the time. But Johnny Bench, Mike Schmidt, I'm a sports fan. Michael Jordan, you know, I'm a sports fan. If you would have told me when I was a little boy, shining shoes in a bar and on my hands and knees, and Frank Sinatra was on the jukebox singing, "Come Fly With Me." If you'd have told me one day you're going to fly with him and for 14 years in 45, 50 cities a year, and you're going to grace the same stage with Frank Sinatra, a little boy with holes in his shoes, I'd say, that's impossible. I'm a sports fan. If you'd have told me that one day when you grow up, you're going to get inside of an arena and you're going to compete with the greatest athletes who ever lived in your lifetime, I said, that's impossible. That can't happen. But I was doing both at the same time. Christopher Morley, the author, once said, success is living the life you want. I was living a dream. You know, I played with Tiger many times, and I also did shows for the Tiger Woods Foundation and became friends with Tiger. Peter Jacobson, I did this tournament every year up in Portland, Oregon. You know, Freddie Couples, I did shows for his charities and played golf with Freddie all the time. Every time I see Freddie, he wants to know, give me the latest joke, Tom. Give me the latest joke. You know? but so there's so many, John Elway, Dan Marino, people that I admired. And now you're playing golf with them. Lee Trevino, and Jack Nicklaus, you know, and asking them for advice, you know. There were so many pinch me moments, Chris, in my life, from being a caddy, from starting out at 11 years old, carrying, you know, sometimes two bags a day, to help feed my brothers and sisters, to fast forward, and now I'm out there and they're paying me to play golf. On the Celebrity Players Tour, it was like the LIV Tour. Even if you finish dead last, you get paid.
Tom, just a couple more before I let you go. And you wrote a book, speaking of Frank Sinatra, you wrote a book about touring with him and his career. It's titled Still Standing, My Journey from the Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. Talk about what we're going to learn when we go out and buy that book.
Well, you'll learn things. You know, first of all, you read a triumphant story, a story about this little boy, you know, that struggled all through his childhood, but it began to live a dream. So it's a triumphant story. I've been knocked down a lot. Why I call it Still Standing, because I'm a stand-up comedian for 55 years, but that's a double entendre. I was knocked down a lot in my life, physically knocked down in my life, but I kept getting back up again. And that's most of the reviews, it's got right now over 500 five-star reviews. Forgive me for bragging about that, but I'm real proud of that fact. Over 500 five-star reviews on Amazon. And a lot of people say that it was a triumph to read it. It was a page-turner, you know. And also, you'll learn things about Frank Sinatra, if you're a Frank Sinatra fan, that you've never heard before. Because I stayed in his home six times a year. I toured with him 14 years in 45, 50 cities a year. And he stayed up till dawn every night. And when I stayed down in his home, he wanted me to ride around the desert with him, you know, till the sun came up. So I had some great personal experiences with him. Some things that I shared in the book that you've never heard before, you know.
And Tom, you did a wonderful one man show, The Man Who Made Sinatra Laugh. Is that something you're going to carry on throughout this fall and into 2025?
Oh yeah, I'm doing it all over the country. It's you can go to my website, tomdreesen.com. But yeah, it's a 90-minute show. Because the irony was, I knew this would happen when Frank Sinatra passed away. I continued working, but every interview I ever went on, everywhere I went, the first thing they'd say to me was, "Tell me about Frank Sinatra." Every year I'd run a marathon. I'd run 26 miles for multiple sclerosis because my sister had MS. So I called it 26 miles for Darlene. And CNN, we're in Chicago, I'm getting ready to run CNN, comes, the cameras are all going on. And the CNN guy said, "Tom Dreesen's about to run his first," we're on live now. He said, "Tom Dreesen's about to run his first marathon. Tom, before you get started, tell me about Frank. You know, what was Frank Sinatra like?" So what I decided to do, okay, I do a one-man show. It's stand-up comedy. I walk out and I do a monologue. And do a stand-up comedy, but I segue to a bar where there's a bottle of Jack Daniels on the bar, Frank's drink of choice, you know. And I start telling stories, and pictures come on the screen authenticating the stories, as well as video of Frank and I. And it's just a fun evening, a 90-minute show. It's so much fun.
Tom, before I let you go, let our listeners know, how can they go out and check out your website and you on social media? Because we want to make sure that when you're coming to a town to do that show or anything else, that our listeners have an opportunity to come see you.
I'm on Instagram and I'm on TikTok. And also, you can find me at Tom Dreesen, Dreesen. Everybody puts an extra S in there like dressing, but it's three E's, Dreesen.com. And you can find out all about me. And you can email me on there if you like and tell me how much you like Chris.
I appreciate that. Tom, you're the best, my friend. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and be a part of the show. I hope we get this privilege of catching up with you again before too long.
I do too. You know, when I do, Chris, sometime I'm going to send you some stories that I learned from, like, Jack Nicklaus, from Arnold Palmer, from Tiger Woods, stories that I learned. I think I got some audio tape somewhere. Maybe I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I'd love that. I'd appreciate that very much.
Give me your address when you email me.
I will do it. Tom, take care, my friend. All the best to you and your family. Like I say, I hope we get this privilege of having you back on the show again soon.
Anytime. I'd be glad to do it.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, Chris. Take care, buddy.
You too. That is the great Tom Dreesen, folks. Again, the title of his most recent book is still standing, My Journey from the Streets and Saloons to the Stage and Sinatra. Like he said, several 5-star rated out there on Amazon. He's got 479 reviews, and most of them are 5-star rated. So that tells you how great the book is. You can follow him at Tom Dreesen Comic on social media. And again, like he said, TomDreesen.com is his website. And go look up the videos from the many times that he appeared on The Tonight Show. They were great. Yeah, I get, you know, we all get nervous about looking at ourselves and things that we think we could have done differently or dressed differently or better, things of that nature. But Tom was, you know, just fall down hilarious. When he came out on the stage and he did The Tonight Show or he did Letterman, and I went back and I looked at a lot of those videos, folks. And like I say, you can find them out on YouTube, or you can go and, you know, Johnny Carson's got his own channel on a lot of the streaming sites. You can watch him on there, and Tom 61 times. So the odds are you're gonna come across those if you watch them as often as I do. But he is just so funny. And then the things that he did for our game and the game of golf and the Tom Dreesen Classic that he hosted for many years, being at the Bob Hope Desert Classic, being out on the celebrity tour for many years, the things that he did for our game are just endless. And like I say, he's sort of an American treasure, if you will, because he has been such a part of our lives for so many years. I think you treasure someone like that. He talked about it at the beginning. Is he a legend? Well, I mean, he's a legend in the comedic world. And that doesn't mean that, you know, to me, that's not age related. And that is not anything to do with things of that nature. It's because of the contributions that he has made to our society over the years. Again, you win an award, you know, for being a wonderful American, for the contributions that you've made to our country. That tells you something else you need to know about Tom Dreesen. Fantastic guy, wonderful comedian, and a fantastic actor on top of that. Hopefully we get the privilege of having Tom back on the show again before too long.
All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this week's edition of Next on the Tee. I want to send out my sincere thanks again to Susie Whaley, Missy Bertiotti, Megan Yonkman, and Tom Dreesen for being here with us this week. Scheduled to join me next week are Steelers legend, one of my all-time favorite players and a member of our Thursday Night Tailgate Guest Hall of Fame, Greg Lloyd. We'll be here. Greg is always fantastic. Such great story, such great passion. Everything about the way he used to play the game comes through in each and every time that we interview him. So I'm very excited to have Greg a part of the show. I'll get a Next on the Tee debut from a wonderful physical therapist and athletic trainer, Dr. Kathy Heft, will be here. Then we'll get return visits from two of the top instructors in our game, Virgil Herring and Rick Fair will be back with me as well. So it's going to be a great show. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. I want to send out my sincere thanks also to our friends over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site for coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports. Go to triblive.com. You can find this show by clicking on the sports section tab, and the most recent episode is going to be there for you, front and center of the homepage of the sports section. If you click on Podcast Network and then on the Next on the Tee logo,
You'll find several episodes from this year so you can catch up on anything that you might have missed. Also want to let you know that our great friends over at Good Pods, I can't thank those folks enough for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and listen to your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device as well. But like I say, each and every week, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.